I'm not going to be long. I want to spend a little time looking at the Road to Emmaus story that Liz read for us. I don't know, and I prayed today to ask the Lord to anoint me for this sermon that he and I worked on. I really said to him, I think if I had one more week on this sermon, it would be just about where I want it to be. But anyway, you're going to get it anyhow. And let's talk about this road to Emmaus. The road to Emmaus, according to my study Bible, was 60 stadia long. I don't know what a stadia is, but it's 11 kilometers, or about 7.5 miles. In other words, from Jerusalem where they were to the town where they were going, it's about 7.5 miles. The name Emmaus may have come from the name, the Hebrew Yem, Y-E-M. Yem meant hot springs or springs, and it may have been derived from the hot springs that were in the area, and I don't know that. But you have two people journeying on this road to Emmaus. Cleopas is one. The other one is unnamed, which gives us a pretty good indicator that it was a woman and probably his wife Mary. And I know that from the Gospel of John, and don't worry about it. But the Cleopas and Mary, we're going to say, were Passover pilgrims. They had celebrated Passover in Jerusalem. Now they were heading home. Now, Liz read from the New Revised Standard Version. My New Revised Standard Version is a spiritual formation Bible, and that spiritual formation Bible has disciplines and exercises to help gain some intimacy with Christ. And underneath Luke 24, verse 13 to 35, it said this. How many times on our network of roads, I like that, our network of roads, have we lurched with a broken spirit because the unexpected seized us with wrenching disappointment? I'll say it again. How many times have we, on our roads that we've taken, lurched with broken spirits because the unexpected seized us with a wrenching disappointment? And this whole story is really about disappointment. The disappointment of going home, the disappointment of Jesus being dead, the disappointment that things didn't go as they thought they would go after Palm Sunday. And that's interesting because this story takes place on Easter morning. I could have preached it last week and I would have been right straight on. It takes place after the women have gone and found a tomb empty and found two angels who told them that Jesus was not there. He'd risen from the dead. But Cleopas and his wife Mary are not in a resurrection mood. And the reason they're not is because instead of thinking forward, they're thinking behind, and they're rehearsing and reliving what had happened in the past 7 days. Their mind was on what you call Palm Sunday, the parade and the celebration going into town. How wonderful the crowds were, and then how quickly the crowd and the enthusiasm dwindled. Their minds were on the arguments with the Jewish officials and Jesus' posture and then his kind of sober mood at Passover. Their minds were on his arrest and trial, which nobody saw coming but him, and that horrible crucifixion and then the agonizing death that he had, the hurry to bury, I call it, because they had to get him in the ground before sundown on the Sabbath, otherwise they couldn't have buried him at all. And then the tomb in which they laid him. And so their mind was on these things. Theirs was a long 7 miles. Bible says they were sad. Sad doesn't do it. The Greek is they were grim-faced. They were struggling with everything that had gone on before. And they said to this stranger, who really was Jesus, we had hoped he was the one. Oh, we had just hoped that he'd be the one. Hear the disappointment in their voices. Hear the spirits, the doubt, the dashed spirits and the doubt. Now, someone said that if you don't doubt something, it wasn't really important to you to begin with. If you don't have a little doubt about the resurrection story, it probably has never been important to you to begin with. And there was doubt in their mind about the whole thing. Because Cleopas was probably one of the 72 people who had been commissioned by Jesus and sent out in advance to go from town to town to promote and to get town ready for his ministry. It was important. It was special. Things were good back then. But the road to Emmaus was full of broken dreams. And where they are isn't where they thought they'd be. It's Sunday, but the reality is it's Friday in their hearts. And I just wrote this down because it's my creativity. Sarah Bareilles, who's a singer and a songwriter who starred as Mary Magdalene in the live broadcast of Superstar last week on Easter. Sarah Bareilles wrote in a song, "Holding things in place is simply fear of what's already changed." Holding things in place is just really fear of what's already changed. And that describes Mary and Cleopas. They're just afraid of what has already changed. My Bible again, how many times on our network of roads have we lurched with broken spirits because the unexpected seized us with wrenching disappointment? Now, author and preacher Leonard Sweet, I'm one of his fans, and you'll hear me talk about Leonard Sweet. He said, all roads lead to Jesus. I'm not sure that's true. But this one certainly did. In what was their darkest and loneliest walk home, Jesus met them on the way. The Greek implies that he quickened his steps so that he could catch up to them, and he walked along beside them so he could ask them, "What are you talking about?" As if he didn't know. They did not recognize him because in the Greek, it says their eyes weren't open, their eyes were held. The Greek means they were held. They were fixated on the depression that was staring them in the face. And Mary Magdalene had the same problem at the Easter moment when she saw the resurrected Lord and didn't know who he was. Is it possible to grieve somebody so much and to regret so much that when the time comes, you don't recognize them when you see them? I don't know, but I know this. There was a woman in 1864 who was from the Deep South. Her hero of 1864, of course, was Robert E. Lee. Of course it would have been. And she had a portrait of him hanging in her parlor. She always wanted to meet Lee. She always wanted to have a conversation with him. One night, there was a knock at the door, and there were two men in Confederate uniform. They were looking for shelter from the, from the storm, from the elements. They were looking for shelter for the night. And because they were soldiers, she did her civic duty. She invited them in. She cooked them a meal and made accommodations. They went to bed immediately after they ate and were up long before sunrise to leave. They were in her house 7 hours tops. And as they were walking out the door, she said to them, "I didn't even get your names. Who are you?" And the more distinguished-looking gentleman said, "Lee, ma'am, I'm Robert E. Lee." And with that, he mounted Traveler and he was gone. Traveler was his horse. And she said, and she had her hero in the house for 7 hours, and she didn't even know who he was or recognize him. On the road to Emmaus, Jesus was just another Passover pilgrim, really a stranger in these parts, and they never would have known who he was if they wouldn't have opened him up their home and allowed him to come in and sat down and made overnight accommodations for him. Let's pick the story back up, and I'm almost done. As they came near the village to which they were going, Jesus walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it's almost evening, the day is spent." And so he went with them. You hear it? They invited him, he went with them. When he was at table, now I'm going to take this literally, what would have been done. They had him do the blessing. He took the bread, and he gave thanks, and he broke it. Sounds like our communion, doesn't it? And he gave it to them in pieces, just as we do sometimes for communion. And it's when he did this that light bulbs went off, and they knew who he was. The Greek says they were attentive, they were focused, and they knew who he was. And just like that, he was gone. And they said, "Weren't our hearts kindled? Weren't our hearts burning when we were on the road with him?" And immediately they left the table, they left the dishes, they left everything, went back the 7 miles to Jerusalem where the crowds were to give their testimony. Someone has said that Jesus will not force himself on you. He won't force you to dedicate your child. He won't force you to be baptized. He won't force you to be in relationship with him, but he does wait for you, and he will walk alongside you and wait to be invited in. Behold, I stand at the door. Revelation 3, what is it, verse 20? Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Anyone hears my voice and comes to the door and lets me in, I will come in and have supper with him. Now, do you suppose that this is an Emmaus moment, the Sunday after Easter in our church? Let me explain. Last week, Easter Sunday, there were crowds. Actually, this service was just about the way it is today, but the service upstairs was a lot different. There were 235 in church with friends and guests. This Sunday, not so much. I think this is my 35th Easter I've been preaching, and I have never understood why you can't keep a crowd. But they leave because they lose enthusiasm, and I've come to expect that because it's Emmaus. Last Sunday, upstairs, there were 30 pots of flowers, and the place wafted with a wonderful fragrance, unless you're allergic. This morning there were two, and one of them wasn't fresh, in that it was left over from a funeral earlier in the week. The road to Emmaus looked strangely barren up there for a place that's known for its restorative waters. Last Sunday, we had all this wonderful praise music, and today I think they were on their A game. I think here the music was just as good, if not better, than last week. Upstairs, we had a full choir. Upstairs, we had handbells. We had brass. We had percussion. We had a piano and organ duet. We sang robustly. I thought you guys sang pretty good today. But on the Sunday after Easter, the road to Emmaus, after all, is for the downcast and the dejected. And sometimes it's hard to sing about a resurrected Christ without a little creative imagination. At least that's the way Cleopas found it. And finally, last week, we turned the calendar to April. And oh my goodness, with the turning of the calendar came the promise of spring. But you know, Mabel Diller told me today out on the farm it was 15 degrees. Doesn't sound springy to me. The crocus and the daffodils in my yard are still reluctantly trying to push their heads up. Right, Mary? And the robins look a little chilly making their nests. Oh, my goodness, if we could relive Easter, if we could just hold things in place and keep them as they are and no changes unless they're good changes for the next 51 weeks, maybe then we wouldn't feel so disappointed and we wouldn't feel so down and we wouldn't feel like there's something broken that needs to be fixed, but we don't know what it is. Do you want to know something? I'm thinking that it's quite possible on our road to Emmaus, Jesus is alive and well. And I'm thinking the only thing is with me anyway is there's something that keeps me from seeing him as he is. It's like my focus is fixed. Maybe our focus is fixed on the wrong thing. I'm thinking that every Sunday Jesus comes along and he walks alongside of us waiting to be invited in. And he does as he did for Cleopas. He opens the word through the pulpit, through Sunday school, through the songs. And he's just waiting to ignite our hearts. I'm thinking that what maybe you might be feeling this post-Easter, which seems maybe a little blah, is actually some well-deserved heartburn. Didn't our hearts burn? You know what that means? That means, weren't we moved when we were with him? That's what the Greek really means. Wasn't I moved? I had burning. I was on fire, and I didn't know why. Are we moved? I'd like to see the crowds. Hopefully before Christmas. But how about a little movement in the meantime? You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking we need a new and different Emmaus. I think in the church we need an Emmaus where we are intentional about inviting the resurrected and risen Lord in. I mean, you've heard me pray often. I didn't this week, but I do pray, Lord, let this ministry be your ministry. Let me put my hands on what you're blessing and what you're not blessing. Don't put my hands on them. I think we need to invite Jesus and be more intentional, invite him in. And let him be part of our affairs, whatever they are. I think we need a new Emmaus, an Emmaus where we ask God for eyes to see the obvious in front of us and see him as he is. And I think this is good for this church, particularly because of our history. I think we need a new Emmaus where you stop living in the past. Quit re-rehearsing what has been and start looking at what can be and what will be. Because of him. I think we need an Emmaus where, like Cleopas and Mary, we leave our comfortable spot and go back to Jerusalem where the crowds are and tell what he's done for me. That's a whole sermon, because I think in the Church of the Brethren, we're not as good as some other churches. And I don't mean Chambersburg Church, I mean the denomination in general, at telling what Jesus has done for us. We're very good at washing feet and serving. But being verbal about what's happened to us is something we need to work on. Curdy, I put this in for you. Daniel Cantor, do you know Daniel Cantor? He is the designer of the Coda music software. You know, yeah, okay. An entrepreneur and an author. And he said this. He said, it's time for people of faith, that's you and me, to open the eyes of a world that believes it's already seen everything. It's time for you and me to open our eyes so that we can go out and open the eyes of the world that thinks they've seen it all. I think we need a new Emmaus. I think it could be a real eye-opener. I think it could be very good and wonderful, but, you know, that's what I think. Dear Lord, thank you for the message that you've given us today, and I pray that in some small way, some part of it smoke and means something, and we recognize that we're on a journey, we're on a road, we're not on a sprint, we're not on a mad dash, we're actually just journeying and walking, and we're not perfect in our walk. And we, even if we've been in the church for years and years and years, we don't know it all. And that's okay. I think you want to come along, and you are alongside of us. And I think when we invite you to come in, something will happen. Somebody one time called it a holy takeover. And we will become something that is different than who we were when we came in here. I pray for this church. I pray this church will grow. I pray this church will be about ministry. I pray this church will be about your word and not worry so much about the crowd as content and hearts. Hearts that are softened, hearts that are changed. For I pray these things, Jesus, in your precious name. You know, we have victory in you. You're our Savior forever. You bought us with your redeeming blood. And for that, we are very, very grateful. Amen.